You're listening to the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. And welcome to episode 8 of the War Machine and Hordes UK and Ireland Super Series podcast. This is your host Chris, and I also have hosts James.
Hello everyone.
And Toby.
Good evening.
Unfortunately, Rich can't be with us. He's being an adult and all that kind of nonsense. So,
boo.
We got to play with toys and talk about playing with toys.
And with those kind of things.
Exactly. So it's been a little while since we've put the cast out due to other adult things. So I'll just give a quick update of the events that are going on. And coming up, and then the topic for today is that we are all losers. That's right, especially James. I mean, we are all... So to run through the events to start with, so coming up we have on the 21st of April, it's going to be a busy weekend. This is going to be next weekend, so I'll get this out hopefully. You can sign up for any reserves. There's going to be the Welsh Third Steamroller on the 21st of April. We then have in the Midlands. James, do you want to cover these two?
Yeah, we've got the Walsall Midlands qualifier for the UKIS Midlands Regional, and that will be on the 21st of April. In Walsall at the church. You can find all the details of where exactly it is online. We also have the Leicester Fat Cats doing the Leicester qualifier for the Walsall regional, and that will be on the 22nd, which is a Sunday. So after next weekend, we should know all 16 qualifiers for the Midlands final.
So if you want to get there and smash some Midlanders and get and take their regional spots.
How many of the qualifiers currently, James, have been from the kind of Midlands area?
I think it's everyone but Mark. So seven of eight so far.
It's a really strong showing kind of thing.
Well, you know, it's what happens when you're one of the stronger regions.
love it. Talking of the stronger regions, we have the Northwest. We've got the Nerd Shack in Wigan on the 6th of May. So two more slots for the Northwest Regional. Are available there, so if you want to get involved, get in touch with the Nerd Shack. And the final one coming up is, I mean, obviously not the final one, but one coming up is the Welsh Masters. So this one is obviously there's 160 players. I guarantee you that not all 160 will arrive because of traffic, adulting, and therefore, if you're not going already, get yourself down there because there is one national spot. So that one will literally bypass all the regional qualifiers, and you will just go straight into the nationals if you win the Welsh. So there's an extra prize on top of the myriad of prizes that Martin is arranging for that. Have you seen all that stuff? Just on a side note, because we like to promote obviously everything that's going on in War Machine. Have you seen all the stuff that's coming for the Welsh?
Oh, it is ridiculous. I think every year he has like two armies that get given away for just people just randomly being there. And then there's just a slew of prizes. Like at the end, it takes about 2 hours or whatever to do the raffle because there's just so many prizes to be given away.
And I think, to be honest, that there's probably not a more competitive field in the entire UK each year than the Welsh Masters. You get people from the continent. You get people from all around the UK, Scotland, England, Wales, even guys coming over from Ireland.
Yeah,
and there's lots of Midlands players as well, which is...
Well, I mean, that goes without saying, you know.
But yeah, definitely.
You've got to have someone on the mid-tables, haven't you?
Exactly. I mean, the best thing as well is, I mean, I remember when this first started up, it was like it was like 50 man ready for the Nationals, wasn't it? Just to get ready for the Nationals. And then eventually he kind of went, oh, no, we can make it into a Masters. And now it's actually, you know, surpassing the numbers of the Nationals each year. So, yeah, crazy. If you've not got a ticket already, get yourself a ticket, get yourself down there. Because, I mean, I'm pretty sure you'll get your ticket price in prizes and goodie bags and stuff like that anyway. So,
it's so well done.
Oh, yeah. So any more events from you guys, or are we all good there?
So we will have the fourth and final London Super Series qualifier, which we're actually holding down in Brighton at the Dice Saloon, and that's going to be the end of July. And then we too will have our final 16 for the London Super Series, and we'll probably have the winner of the UKIS from those final 16, I would imagine.
Has Pat qualified yet?
He has. He sneaked in.
So yeah, I mean, there are more besides. If you want to check out where your nearest one is, obviously the Midlands is nearly up, so you've got to get in there if you can. And then if you check out the website, the wmhukiss.co.uk, you can see all the qualifiers, you can see all the details to make sure you can get yourself in and hopefully get a spot for the nationals. And also, slight tangent there, Toby, I believe you've been working on something for the regionals, or some of the regionals.
Yes.
Anyway,
I was just going to mention that if for those who have qualified for the regional finals in their area, so that's all of them apart from bar a couple, so check with your organizer. We should be sourcing some pretty cool swag, which we'll post up on social media when we've got some kind of final proofs and pictures. But yeah, no, I'm really, really happy with that. It's a really cool bit of kit that people, I'm sure, will be excited to show off. To earn,
because that's it now. It's not just you've gone along, you bought your ticket, you get it. You've got to earn your place in your regional qualifier. So yeah,
I obviously got one myself. Just
well,
yeah,
you know.
I was going to say, if you're playing at a big event and you're across the table and you see one of these little things, unless it's Toby, you know it's a real quality play.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, there might be a few unscrupulous people that
Tobies.
Have their own.
Yep.
But, you know, most of them means that they at least know which way to face their models and when to pop their feet. Right, so for this one, we'll just go straight into the topic, unless there's anything more you guys want to cover.
Nope,
I'll go for it, mate.
Cool. Right, so the topic is We Are All Losers. I just heard something in the background there. Disagreement. What I mean by that is that when we play this game, it's that kind of game. It's like chess. You know, there's a winner, there's a loser. There can't be a winner without there being a loser. In the Welsh that we just talked about, there's going to be 160 players at that event, which means there's 159 people who will lose at least one game. Yeah, no. And is that your daughter in the background, by the way, Toby?
She is. She Aww. Is. She's a born winner, you see. So she says that she never loses.
Exactly.
She's arguing
fair,
with you about.
She has never lost a game of War Machine yet. So that is actually true.
She's currently undefeated. Yeah.
Exactly. So other than maybe the eventual winner, everyone at that event will go away with at least one loss. So one of the things we wanted to talk about is from the two perspectives, is from a personal perspective, but also from like a faction perspective and an army perspective, is things that you can look at about losing games. So the first one is something that I used to be absolutely useless at, and I'm still working on it because it is something that I obviously I'm quite a logical person, but I'm strangely emotional when it comes to things like War Machine. So if I'm losing, I tend to get, you know, I can get quite flustered and things like that. So one of the things I've been trying to work on since playing this game and other games besides is to try and be like a gracious loser. And I imagine it's a similar thing for yourself, guys. You know, you get quite invested, you make your models, you get your tactics, you do things, something doesn't quite right, or your opponent, you know, kills that model that you didn't think they'd kill, and then everything goes downhill. One of the things I always try and do is to try and remove myself from that situation, because if you think about it, if you just try and imagine yourself watching what you're doing now, some of the time you kind of go, yeah, it's not great for your opponent to watch, it's not great for you to watch, if you're kind of getting very, you know, flustered and things like that. So sometimes it might be a good idea just to, you know, just trying to take a deep breath. If you've got some time on your you know, clock, or if it's the end of the game, you know, either in game when something's happened or at the end of the game, just trying to just walk away for a little bit, just say to your opponent, yeah, I just need to walk away for a moment, try and calm yourself down, because you don't want to get that reputation. It is a game of people to come together. You don't want to get that reputation of being like a sore loser kind of thing. I mean, how do you guys have a similar, did you have that when you first started? Do you ever still have that? I know I still occasionally have, you know, those kind of moments where I get flustered.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's just the approach that you need to take to the game. And obviously, people spend a lot of time painting their models, building their models, thinking about the game. And if your play time is restricted, some people really, really, really kind of put a lot of time and investment into games or tournaments.
Yep.
But I think the thing that you never need to lose sight on is you need to have fun. Yep. And if at any point you're not having fun, then you really need to kind of stop and take a break and think about, you know, what's contributing to that. Because that's what it should be. Do you know, it's a hobby and you're meant to have fun doing it. That's not to say that you can't, you know, be competitive and be serious about it. I think you just need to remember that having fun is the main thing. And actually, that you're not going to win every game. And it would be boring if you did, because that's pointless. Do you know?
I mean, have you seen Pat lately? He looks bored out of his mind.
Exactly. And we don't want to end up looking like Pat.
It's not just about fun for yourself as well, though. Like there's nothing worse than when you win a really close game and then your opponent's there going, oh, you know, if only you hadn't rolled those tough checks, or if only my attack would have, you know, if only I'd rolled that boosted six. It's like, well, you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't take away from your opponent's enjoyment of the victory at that moment in time. I know you're disappointed, but you're an adult, and you enter a social contract in this game. You wouldn't like it if someone did it to yourself. Someone comes away and they're like, oh, I should have won that game, blah, 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 blah. Why not just say congratulations? You know, well played.
Exactly. And I think that find, you know, one of the hardest things to do is to take that moment to kind of take a step back and think, actually, you know, I did have a good lot of fun. Do you know, that might have been maybe slightly unlikely, but there's also lots of things that my brain has kind of filtered out that contributed to that game ending the way it did. But people tend to focus on very particular recent events or dice rolls. But you should just be mindful that what you want to do is you want to create an environment where people enjoy playing games with you in the kind of cleanest, tightest game you can play, and that you don't kind of sour that by being grumpy or upset or, you know, blaming at the end of a game.
Yeah, and the main thing to take from this, if you're listening, you go, God, Chris, you're a terrible opponent, and I probably have been. Guaranteed there'll be people out there that when I first started playing this, I try and be much better now, but when I first started playing this, I would get frustrated, I would get mopey, you know, someone had double six me and killed the caster and all this kind of thing, and I get dead grumpy. But I do try and be better. But I think one of the main reasons that helped me get out of that mindset of being grumpy about things is two main reasons. One is this concept of we are all losers, is that if you can't play War Machine and lose graciously, you will, unless you win every tournament you ever go to, you are guaranteed to piss at least one person off, you know, or piss every person that you play and lose against, and then that's just going to happen.
Yeah, and more importantly, let's look at this from a totally selfish point of view. Even if you don't care about pissing people off, not making friends, being known as a bad loser, all these things, you will inhibit how good you get at this game. Yep. If you cannot look at a loss and say, I lost because of mistakes that I made myself. Go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, that is point number two. So point number one is, socially, people will hate you. Point number two is, the next bit, which I believe I'll let you jump onto, is that you will never get past that, because you're spending the important time, and this is really important time, to actually make yourself a better player. So, sorry, go on, carry on.
No, it's 100% true. We have, if you have a decent gaming size group at your area, you might know players like this. You'll know players that whenever they lose a game, they swap faction, or they swap list, or they swap caster, always chasing something that can help them win, because when they lose, it's the list's fault or it's their dice's fault. And the moment that you get better is when you can lose a game and you can face the harsh reality of playing one-on-one with someone beats you, and you can look across the table and say, you played better than me, but next time I am going to work on it, and I'm going to try better, and I am going to be a better player than you next time. And you need to disassociate, you need to swallow your pride and just say, yeah, I lost to someone who outplayed me, and now next time this won't happen.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the important bit. Go on.
Sorry, Toby, you going to say something?
No, just to echo, I totally agree with that. Yeah. I think as soon as you start to look at what you did, rather than kind of these other external, you know, factors that you can blame or whatever, then you're not going to really learn anything until you can start analysing and being critical of what you could have done differently. Yeah. That would have made it kind of a different game, rather than just, you know, blaming all these kind of external things that you've got no control, because you have got control over most of them.
Yeah. I mean, the second part to this, and obviously, of the personal side, is the things that you can actually do. So I'm not just going to say stop getting grumpy. There are actually things, and I've seen these things work, that I've seen other people do, and I've actually seen them become better players because of it. So some of the examples that I've seen are people like Ben Thomas, who's on the current England team. You've got people like Rob, one of your locals, James. And what they do is they have a regular blog where they write their battle reports. Okay, so what you'll see and what I've seen talk to them and the way that they play and stuff is that because when they are playing the game, they're already in their mind thinking about, you know, they're taking pictures, they're analyzing the game from a, I need to remember this to write it up in my blog later. You know, the that whole, oh, you know, dice, it was the dice. It was turn six, the dice fell over. But actually, what they've done is through the fact that they continually write up their results, they'll actually start to realize that, oh, actually, maybe turn two, when I sent this unit over here, where it killed that model, but then did nothing for the rest of the game. And then that meant that actually, when I failed that boosted six, I wouldn't have needed a boosted six if this model hadn't have been sent on the opposite side of the table. So straight away, because they're actually reflecting on their battles and they're reflecting on the completeness of their battles, not just that last roll or that last turn, what that means is they're able to actually learn quickly and they have that mindset of learning from the start. So that can actually help when you lose, because straight away it's not, you know, oh, I didn't get that six. It's like, okay, where did it go wrong? Where did I need that six? So yeah, I mean, if you read the, we've got a load of blogs on our website. So if you go and check them out, you'll see in their battle reports how they kind of, like, you'll see them reflecting in how they do it, and you can, when they're reflecting, what they're doing is they're actually putting into practice this being a gracious loser. They're not kind of going, oh, it was just the dice, you know, it was actually, no, I you know, I did this, I shot this instead of this, and, you know, or they might go, oh, I didn't kill this, which will be important later, and that kind of thing. So that's one way of I think improving it.
I think also, Chris, like, that is a really good point, but recording, if it, whether it's pictures or it's writing down kind of dice rolls and all that kind of stuff, actually enables you to be a lot more objective, and it takes out that kind of emotive response, because you're going back and you're looking at what happened rather than having this kind of this memory skewed by your emotional response because you lost. And also because I think quite a common thing is when you've played people and they maybe are a bit upset by losing, and they'll say how unlikely something was, and actually the likelihood isn't that unlikely, but just because they're upset by losing, they've not been able to process it, and so they're missing out because they think something's unlikely to happen because they lost. But actually, if you've got the kind of numbers and you've got the information there to kind of look back, then you can look at things and appraise things properly without that kind of so intense emotive responses are kind of at the end of a game.
So tools like there's an app, isn't there, that does like calculations for assassinations and things like that.
I want to warn against Odds Machine.
I was just going to say, Odds Machine, I don't like Odds Machine. I don't like Odds Machine as a predictive tool. I think it's an awful predictive tool, because in Odds Machine, you're entering in what you can do, and then it's telling you what the odds are of it happening. But what it doesn't do is break down, you know, what if the first attack misses, how important separate attacks are in that chain, you know, all these things. So I think it's actually a really bad predictive tool as to whether you should do something. But I actually think Odds Machine is a fantastic tool for what Toby just mentioned, which is you try and kill something, it didn't die, and you put everything you put into it, and you go, God, that should have died. When actually you can go, okay, this is what I put into it, what is the chance that it actually would have died? And I've actually had this with one of my locals, where he was convinced that something should have died, and he felt very hard done by that it hadn't died. When we actually looked at how it should have, it was about 50%. So at that point we go, well, it's literally a coin flip whether it lives or dies. You know, you're basing your entire turn on killing it. You know, really, would you have put your entire turn on a coin flip? And at that point, you know exactly what you did. Not, you know, you don't kind of go, oh, I missed the first shot, how does that skew the odds and all this kind of thing, which I see people use an Odds Machine for. So that's a good tool for analyzing afterwards. Sorry, you're going to say, James, is a separate point for Odds Machine? Or?
Yeah. I think the issue is, I think it's useful for going at the end of a game and going, oh, maybe I shouldn't charge this into this arcane shielded colossal because it's not going to kill it. And it's got a very small chance of doing that. That's fair enough. What I do see, unfortunately, is people using that as the only, like to back up decisions that led to a lost game. Like, fair enough, if you went in on something and it should have died 80% of the time, that's fair enough. But I see so often people go, oh, well, you know, this should have died, blah, 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 or this, you know, this. And I feel you're taking away some of the responsibility in the game, because I'll be honest about this. Like, I've played Pat now 4 or 5 times. I think he's considered by many to be the best in the world. And if I said to Pat, you know, on any turn in a game, you know, against most people, Pat, there's a 80% chance you can go in on an 80% assassination now and win the game, he'd go, no, thank you. I'm going to win the game a different way.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like it. And the fact of the matter is, whenever you go in on an assassination that is not 100%, especially if it's an all-in assassination, you are setting yourself up to fail on those chances. And if it goes wrong, you know, if you have an 80% chance assassination and you do it 5 times in a row in a tournament, you're going to lose one of those games.
Yep.
Because that's what odds is. And that's why the safe play is always attrition. That's why the safe play is always scenario. And I just feel that, you know, if you blame the dice, you're not learning that from that lesson, personally.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, this is one of the things I always try and say to our locals is that, and it's something that because I've not been able to play as much recently, I think I'm probably getting really rusty at, is positioning, I feel, is a much bigger effect to the game than dice.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is that I've seen games won where people haven't rolled dice.
Yep.
And that's just because they've put, you know, models in certain places, of which has meant that your opponent's gone to kill those models, which hadn't put them in the zone, and then they've actually just run out of a scenario because they've used positioning to either block or distract or all these various things. And so the dice themselves are that kind of the thing that makes it not chess. But the reason why we all play in Love War Machine, and you'll kind of get to that point, is that you realize that really the dice are just that kind of random effect factor. There's so much in this game which you can still control, you know, even when it comes down to formations of models of units. I mean, you go, hang on, if I literally put them, you know, an extra half inch separate, that wouldn't have meant that, you know, that blast wouldn't have caught the three of them, which would have meant I had one more guy left. And, you know, all these things you can analyze at the end that will, you know, actually help you learn. And the problem is, as we said, is that, you know, at that time when you lose, things can be quite vague. You know, things, you can be very emotional, you can be very, you know, you've just lost the game, that's your tournament chances ruined, you know, that kind of thing. If you can somehow, you know, if you've just got like a notepad or something with you to just go, right, I've lost, say to your opponent, you know, brilliant, good game, you know, you beat me, you know, they beat you. That's the other thing that I always, like, people, like you were saying before, tend to like take away your opponent's victory. You know, they go, oh, I made a mistake. As though, you know, your opponent didn't win, you lost. Which is a terrible thing to do.
We're talking about tools, though. Like, I would set yourself a little checklist. And at the end of the game, I would shake my opponent's hand. I would say, good game. Regardless of whatever happened, it doesn't matter. Shake your opponent's hand and say, good game, first of all. You owe them that much. Yeah. And then, you know, If there's time, if they're not in a rush, if it's someone, just maybe ask them, you know, what do you think? What do you think of the matchup? Just ask them some questions. Because a really good way is just to hear what your opponent thinks. They might even say, oh, yeah, I got lucky on this dice and this and this. Mm. And they might even say it themselves to you, because often when a person asks you, yeah, say, oh, I was a bit lucky here, I wasn't feeling very good about this bit or this. But you can turn it immediately from I lost on dice to a, you know, an actual discussion, and you can start learning from it. And I think it's all tied into one. But I think you need to get yourself a little ritual, a little checklist of what you want to do when a game ends, and just make sure you follow it.
Yeah, a good one. Just do you want to throw anything, Toby, before I jump in again, or
just I think about the point of the chances or the likelihoods of something happening, and going back and looking at it. I think that's a really useful tool for people in terms of learning about planning, because if you went for this 50-50 and it doesn't work, and that's going to be the game over, cool, you know, that's it, and you make a choice on whether you want to go for that. But what you can do is if you make that happen, you know, at the end of your turn or at the beginning of your turn, so you can either kind of recover from it and make it so it's not such a massive loss, or if you can kind of put yourself in a situation to increase those odds, you know, to allocate more resources to getting something done. It just informs how you're going to play your turn, which is going to make you a bit better. So just kind of working off the assumption that X will happen or Y will happen, and just understanding a bit more about the likelihood so you can plan around them, I think is a really good way for people to improve and people to understand, you know, what's going on in a game.
I think the point, actually, which is really good for, because it kind of combines what both of you said, is that it's something I used to call the Haley effect. And I had it when I played Signar, and you tend to find it when people play Haley 2. They'll come away from a game and you're probably Haley 3 these days. They'll come away from a game and they'll go bang to rights. I had them beat. I had them on scenario. I was winning the attrition game, and then they went for a 10% assassination and they got it. Oh, I can't believe they won. And it's sometimes that we forget that when we're going for our assassination runs, we go, well, you know, 80%, 90%, you know, some people don't even go for them. What people forget is the converse of that, which is when you talk to your opponent at the end of the game, you can turn around to them and be like, okay, so, you know, why did you go for that? And it might be that they turn around and go, well, actually, I saw I was losing on scenario. I don't think I had enough pieces to actually win the attrition game, and I noticed that I could get some attacks onto your caster. I didn't think it'd work, but it was a much better chance than just losing on scenario. And then at that point you realize that actually, if you hadn't have killed, say, two guys to score one zone, you leave, you know, you don't kill them, you keep your caster a little further back, you keep an extra fury on them or focus on them, or you don't cast that spell, yes, you might not win as fast, but actually you remove that option, so therefore they can't even get that 10% on you. And, you know, I've seen, and even I've even had that conversation with, you know, we mentioned Pat a lot, but Pat, I believe he lost in the Nationals last year, and it was very much the conversation afterwards was he was doing very well, he's doing everything, and then he came forward to, I think it was to get into a scenario or to cast a spell or something like that, of which he said, really, when he reflected on it, he didn't need to do it. But his opponent went, right, this is my only chance I'm going to get for this to work. It might be a 10%, it might be a 20%, I'm going for it. And they got it. And you hear that a lot. And it's, you know, if you're going to fail five out of, if you think of it this way, right, if you're not going for those 80%, you're going to lose one game out of five. If you're forcing your opponents, you're playing so well that you're forcing your opponent to go for 20%, that's two games that you've lost out of five. So really, going for 80% assassinations and forcing your opponent to do 20% assassinations will mean you only win three games in five. I mean, I know that's not quite how math works, but
I was just going to say, like, following on, I think that the reason why it's so important to create that environment at the end of the game where you can both be happy that you've, you know, played a good game, you've had fun, you've enjoyed it, you've pushed your models around the table, is because if you don't create the situation, if you're arrogant or you're hostile, then people aren't, you're not going to be able to have an honest conversation about how the game went. Yep. And so if in those situations you're talking about where you've been, you know, dominating a game, and then you think in your mind that, oh, you've been too greedy, what you miss out on is when you speak to that person, they might agree with you and say, oh god, yeah, no, this was horrendous, I always thought you had a really big advantage, but I knew the only way that I was ever going to win was by killing you or assassinating you. Then that's in that. Then that's something that you've not identified or you've misidentified. So that's something that you can improve on, you know, moving forward. In the, okay, I should have realised earlier that the only way that they could come into this game was by assassinating me. So I should have played 2 inches back, or I should have camped more focus or fury or whatever. Yeah. But I think unless you create those environments where people can have that conversation with you, then you're not going to get that response. People are just going to walk away from the table and think that you're being sour.
And you also get those situations where, and James could probably, I remember, I think we had a conversation about this at like a Steamroller previously, and you were talking about pairings, and I think you were talking about one of your pairings, if you'd swapped it that weekend, you could have brought another pairing with them. When you drop your lists, these kind of conversations can happen when you go, right, I've dropped the wrong list, so I should have dropped the other list. Where actually, if you get hostile with your opponent at the end, or you're just this, you know, horrible, miserable person, you can't have that conversation about why did you drop your list. Because normally, if they've won, they're quite happy to go, well, I dropped that because of this, dropped that because of this. You know, like I mentioned when I was at BonesCon, I played against Matt, and he dropped, he said to me, he was like, oh, I wanted to drop Kruger into Orion, and but he wanted to drop his other list into the Lucant one, and he kind of felt it was a bit list chicken. And I was like, okay, because I don't play Circle, so I don't know really. I mean, I can guess, I can go, I think that's your, you know, your Convergence drop, that's your, you know, Signar drop or whatever, but I don't really know from the perspective of them. And if you foster this, you know, as we said, a social contract, you know, they're probably more than happy for you to just say, oh, okay, I would have thought you would have dropped this, and that, and, you know, if you've been nice to them and they're nice to you, they could be like, actually, no, you know, the only thing I really would have feared was this. And then, as James mentioned in one of the Steamrollers, he said, right, if I'd brought, I think it was Doomy 2, I might have been wrong, if you'd swapped to Doomy 2, which list would you have dropped at that point? And then they might go, oh, okay, if that's the case, if it's Colgrimmar and Doomy 2, I probably would have just dropped this one definitely into both of them. So at that point, you know, come the next Steamroller or a few Steamrollers down, you play against someone else with a similar matchup, that's giving you a bit of an edge, or possibly giving you a bit of an edge. But, you know, this is all extra information that you can actually use. Whereas, as I said, you know, in these situations when you lose, you know, you're wasting this opportunity. And you're also, I mean, I know loads of people through this hobby, and, you know, I would say majority of them, there's only probably like one or two who thankfully aren't in the hobby anymore, who I would have said aren't actually nice people. So there's just loads of people that it's really nice to get on with. You see it in other scenarios, or friends. You know, I've made loads of actual, like, real life friends through this hobby that I wouldn't have met without it. So, you know, if you're unhappy and you're not able to control your emotions, you're going to miss out on those opportunities to actually, you know, make these friends. So, yeah, Sorry, James?
I was just going to say, like even that situation you were talking about there, like that loss to Ben, that we had, where I looked at my list, and my
parents. I can't remember the specifics of it, so yeah,
you can elaborate. But that was I went away from that weekend and I said, actually, I'm not really sure about my pairing, and I had to think about it, and I came out of it with much better lists as a pairing overall. I used the time to reflect. I, you know, went on a huge win streak, because you do, like, you like, losses are so valuable, like, wherever they are. If you lose to a good player, like, looking at it and saying, what happened, can I play something differently, it's such a good learning tool if you're willing to use it correctly and not just say, oh, it was dice, or oh, it was this, or oh, it was that. Like, I can't stress how much more valuable, like, a loss is than an easy win. You know, I mean, it's so valuable as a part of the game. And you just need to start, you need to have that mentality that when you lose, yes, you're sad that you've lost, but you should also be happy because you've learned something, and you've learned more than you'll ever learn from a win. Hmm. I feel.
So have you guys got any more points on the personal side of losing before we move on to a sort of a faction side of things?
Just to kind of give a bit of context or a bit of an example. So I managed to get out of a game this week, which was awesome. And so something that we kind of tend to do down the club is we'll do like a two list swap. So to kind of simulate a tournament kind of environment, sort of, and also just kind of familiarize ourselves with the other person's list and look up kind of models and all that kind of malarkey. So I was playing Dave, who was on the War Nouns of Renown podcast. He plays down the club, good player, and he was playing some Legion lists, and we ended up with Thagrosh 1 in the Nephilim tier. I forgot what it's called, but it has all the character heavies. Really, really good list, really interesting list. And he and I was trying out this new kind of horde drop for my pair with Borka 2, just because I was getting a bit tired of Madrak. And really interesting game. Kind of, I really liked lots of elements of the Borka 2 list, which I hadn't really kind of maximized before. I can't remember if it was, I think it was either James or Andy Garrard who'd mentioned how good bears were. I think it was Andy, in fact. Bears were with Borka 2 because of the Snow Shroud giving them concealment, and that you can kind of have these pseudo heavies because they can act as a heavy, and that they'll kill the heavies. When normally Borka 2, I don't agree with him can't run a big battle group. And so we played, and then I got greedy, and I went and I killed a model, and I knew at the time that I was going down, you know, to zero fury, and I'd defeated, and I was stood in the stone and all that kind of stuff. But it gave him the opportunity, and having that conversation with him afterwards, it gave him the opportunity to say, right, I don't think this game is going well, but he's left me an opportunity now to try and kill him. Children of the Dragon is the theme. Yeah, you're right, James. He'd left me an opportunity. I'd left him an opportunity to assassinate me. Whereas if I'd have sat on one, because after he's rolled it out and killed me, and that Azrael, have you played against that guy?
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah,
that is bonkers. That has got to be the best gun in the game.
Yep,
I think. So it left him with Azrael to shoot me twice, and then Thagrosh to obliterate me. So and the rolls were a bit high, but the lesson is I shouldn't have left myself on one. Left myself on zero. If I leave myself on one, he can't do it, and then the game, I think, is much more favourable if it continues. But just being greedy, because I wanted to kind of ramp up and have that extra, I think it was an extra, I spent it on a spray to clear out a zone, and I didn't need to do that. I could have just kind of sat back. And so I realised that I was playing too aggressively. And so next time when I play it, I just need to play more slowly, really kind of push and bully the game. But yeah, so that's a kind of example of taking away. He's having a chat. Me and Dave had a chat afterwards, and he said, "Look, if you're on one fury, I'm not going to go for it." And then we kind of talked about how the turn would look if I'd have been on one fury, and he'd have played it out differently, and it's a much better outcome for me. So just having those kind of conversations after the game, I think, is really useful. But you need to obviously have that relationship with the other player, and you create that by kind of not being a dick for all intents and purposes.
It's fascinating that there you're talking about identifying loss conditions, because often in the game we talk about how you need to identify win conditions and see what, and when you're in a situation you go, how can I win this game? But sometimes it's like you get there, sit there and you go, I could score an extra point on scenario, but you know, if I don't, you know, and I save that extra fury, you know, will that be will that save me from any kind of assassination? You know what I mean? Like, if you can take their assassination completely off the table and not score a scenario point this turn. But
Totally. And I should have, learning from it, it's like, okay, with this list in that position, because I'm quite durable and hard to kill and I've got my feet turned, the correct play was taking one scenario point and actually saying to him, I don't think you're going to get any, and then next turn this is only going to go downhill.
Yeah.
So what else are you going to feed me? Do you know? And that's a much, much, much stronger play and stronger position.
I suppose just thinking about it as well, something that we've talked about, like things like Odds Machine and things like, you know, someone like Dave who understands the odds and understands how things work, it's quite likely, especially when you're talking big events, that you might get into the situation where something looks likely but it's not actually likely, and you might come away from a game, if you got in a strop and you're like going, oh, can't believe that happened, you know, storm off, you don't talk to your opponent, and actually it turns out that a similar thing keeps happening, then you go, oh, this game's awful, when actually if you talk to your opponent and they keep killing your stone, for example, and you're like, yeah, the chances of them killing the stone, they need to hit it so many times, they need to do so many wounds because they'll sack it off to the others, and actually where the way you're playing, and each time you talk to the same, you talk to different opponents and they say the same thing and they go, oh, well, it looked like your stone was, you know, I could take it out, it means that yes, you might know the odds, but actually psychology comes into it a lot in this game, you know, how things look, and it might be that you can either use that to your advantage, or it might be that you actually need to go, hang on, I know that, you know, me putting things in a certain position or in a certain way, or, you know, it might be that your opponent just really at the moment hates the stone, they might go, oh, I need to kill the stone more than anything in the game, when actually that's not going to be your winning condition, but because you don't really understand how your opponent prioritizes things until you talk to them afterwards and then you find these patterns, you won't know how what you actually need to protect, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think having that question, because we've always thought, like, after a game and you say, why did you do that? And they'll be like, oh, I didn't want to push this piece too forward because you'll just do X and Y. And then you can have a conversation about why that's unlikely, or, you know, as a X player, you're probably not going to do that because it's this. And that's just a useful learning tool for both of you. Mm. Like, I think it's really good to have that. To ask a couple of questions after a game, not to kind of pin someone to the table for hours.
Oh, yeah.
You can say, like, oh, if I'd have done this, do you know, would you have done the same thing, or would you have done something differently, or do you know, would that have worried you? And there's just loads of kind of questions that you can use that will really inform how the game could have gone differently.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll move on to the next bit. But basically, in summary, for personal losses, we've discovered that you are going to happen. It is going to happen when you go to events, unless you win, which is, you know, the one person in however many. So quite unlikely. Unless your name rhymes with a hat. So if you don't, you know, use these losses correctly, the way we've talked about, you're missing out on a lot of opportunity to make it so that you are the person that wins these events. So we'll move on to the next bit. So the next part is something that's kind of like a Facebook topic I keep seeing coming up. So this is faction losses and who is, you know, the losing factions. I don't know if you guys have seen this as well. So it'll have a local steamroller, or even a more of a bigger steamroller, or something like an event in America with 32 people or something like that. And it'll have, someone will bring out the factions that are top. So they'll say, right, you know, Crick's got an 80% win rate and Retribution got a 20% win rate, so that must mean that Retribution is awful and Crick's is OP, we need to nerf it. Have you guys seen that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So the thing about this is, there's, I mean, obviously we can discuss the intricacies of it, which Toby, I was talking about with Toby and James prior to this, but one of the things you need to realize is that there are currently 13 factions in the game. There's going to be 14 when Crucible Card come out. So even if, you know, if each faction is represented, which most of the time they're not all represented, but let's say each faction is represented in a 16-man steamroller and two of them are doubled up, that means that if you take this kind of, oh, we're in the bottom half, no matter what happens, because you, no matter how good the people are, so say you've got, you know, let's say we get Keith Christensen, right? Currently, you know, big on the Cricks, right? We clone him, right? We clone him, we put him playing everyone, okay? Right? You're going to end up with factions at the bottom, you're going to end up with factions at the top. And we've already mentioned that even if the people are the same skill, the same ability, you've got the things about list builds, you've got the things about what they took that day, you've got things about what was there that day, and you've also got the dice, you know, and guaranteed you cannot have them all in the top half because there's too many factions, you know. So it's this kind of like weird, oh, we didn't win, or we've not been any in the top six, or we've not been in the top 10, or we've not been in this. And it's this kind of like weird, you know, it can't all happen, you know. Someone always has to be relegated from the, you know, the football things. I'm very terrible at football stuff, but you know what I mean, like, you, because someone always has to win and someone always has to lose in these events, not everyone can be top the tables. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always going to be winners and there's always going to be losers. I think I think the game is based on so many variables that you're not privy to by looking on the internet, that what it's good to play games. That's the most important thing you can do, I think.
I would personally say that I think faction win percentages are not great at all. Like, I don't take it really anything from those, because you have a lot of players at like a big tournament who, you know, might be newer to the game, might not know the matchups very well. You know, you can't tell what's going to happen overall. I would say that I hold a lot more weight with what a good player in the faction has done. Like, you know, if I try and complain about Trolls and then Andy Garrard goes 6-1 at a national event, you know what I mean? I would say that I'm probably talking rubbish. And you will see that there's players playing every faction well. Like, can go 6-1, can go 5-2 at a tournament. And so I don't buy into the whole my faction's not very good. You know, if you can do that, I mean, Retribution have been complaining a lot this year, and our own Ben Thomas has managed to place top three at 128-man tournaments.
Yep.
So yep. I would, you know, what are you talking about?
Yeah, and I think this was another point that we made, is that, again, you know, like we'd say, when if you just look at it from the perspective as we did with the personal, you lose a game, you get in a grump, and you just go, oh, we're awful, or I'm awful, or it was just the dice, and you just, you know, walk away. I kind of feel there's the same opportunity here, which is you kind of go, right, I play Rhett, okay, and then I look at this, these results, and the Rhett players are all bottom half. Rhett must be terrible. If you can, and especially in the UK, I don't know if they have something similar in other areas, but tiebreak is an amazing tool which will actually allow you to see the matchups and will allow you to see, you know, who played who faction on faction. Unfortunately, without getting things like, you know, battle reports and stuff like that, you won't see the specific game. But what that might tell you is that, you know, actually you might turn around and the current meta and you go, right, I know that Retribution has a real difficulty with Nemo 3, for example. Let's just throw him out there. Real difficulty with Nemo 3 if you don't take a specific list. And then you look and find that none of the Retribution players actually took a specific list. And each one of them played against the same Signar player or against multiple Signar players with Nemo 3. So straight away, you know that your faction, which has the, you know, this skew into a certain thing that they weren't prepared for, that's instantly three losses, you know, and it's that kind of thing, you know, if you can break it down, if you can see what things people are winning and losing, then you can actually learn from it. You can, instead of just going, oh, Brett are rubbish or Signar are rubbish, you can actually learn from it. And it's the same the other way around. If you say Crix won the tournament, so obviously Crix are OP, when actually if you are a Crix player and you're like, I can't understand why I'm not winning these events, and it turns out that you have a real problem into trolls, for example, there might be a Cold Grimmer list that really just screws over Crix at the moment, and you look at what they played and they didn't play against a troll player, then you know that that's, you know, although yes, they're doing well in that tournament, that's still not going to help you as a player, because, you know, your local meta has James where he's playing, or Toby, and they're playing Cold Grimmer. So you might go, there might be people who on the internet go, oh, well, you know, you just take these two lists and this, these were the lists that the person won with, but you can actually see from the path to victory that they never played against certain factions. And as we've just discussed, even in a seven round event, you're only going to play against half of the factions at maximum on your way to the victory. So, you know, just by saying, oh, they're the best, they won, you know, you're not learning from it.
Great.
Any additional thoughts on that, guys?
No, I think that's covered it, mate.
That's covered it. Cool. Well, that was a bit of I wouldn't say a bit of a preachy one, but it was just more one that I was kind of like thinking about, and we wanted to sort of discuss that, you know, being that there's loads of events going on at the moment, and there's lots of things happening, that, you know, this is a great time for you to be learning, and there's loads of, like, you know, people traveling from different metas into your areas. So see all these opportunities, even if they come in and they beat you, you know, use the things we've talked about so you can actually become a better player and you can actually become better in the future. And hopefully, using all these, you know, all this advice, you can actually end up being, you know, tournament winners yourself. You never know.
Exactly. I mean, the whole ethos of why we put this together was to kind of help promote the game and to kind of get people traveling and playing. And part of traveling and playing is getting better. And I think one of the best ways that you can get better is by learning as much as you can from the games you play.
Exactly. Right then, guys. So what I'll say is we'll wrap this one up here. We'll hopefully get the podcast out a bit more regularly to you guys once everything sort of settles down in the real world. But if you have any feedback, if you've got any tips that you want to share with the local, you know, with the War Machine groups that we've not covered, things that you do that help you actually grow as a player or help you when you're in these situations, you might be quite an emotional player, and things that you've done to actually help you get through it, let us know, get in touch, or get on the Facebook and post and reply, let us know, and we can pass it on, and hopefully everyone will end up just learning and becoming better players, and it will all do better. So thank you very much again from me.
And from me.
Good night, guys.
Good night.